The following podcast is an exclusive presentation of Project Entertainment Network.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
This is Chris Bowen from Fatal Church, and you're listening to the NecroCasticon.
This is Captain Dallas Lee. I'm here to tell you about Adam and Eve. That's right. I'm talking about the great story of Garden of Eden. That's what you got to be talking about right now. Thank you very much.
I don't think that's actually the Adam and Eve they're talking about. I think it's more of the fun kind.
What? Talk about fun kind? That's fun to the captain. I love talking about that.
No. More of like the fun, spicy things that could probably happen in your bedroom.
Oh, spicy stuff. Spicy stuff happens in different rooms in the captain's place. That's right. Out there in the kitchen, I got me a big old mess of chili going right now. Nice and spicy. Nice and hot, too. Hot and spicy. That's the way Captain likes it. You like it hot and spicy?
Well, of course I do, but not too spicy.
You can't take the heat, can you? For Adam and Eve, it's a beautiful story to tell you about right now, but you're talking about a different kind of Adam and Eve, ain't you?
I am, indeed.
It's a kind of an Adam and Eve where you can get free stuff.
Oh, it is indeed. Free stuff is awesome. Go to adamandeve.com. Enter the offer code NECRO at the checkout and get 10 tantalizing free gifts.
10 tentacles?
No, tantalizing.
Oh, tantalizing. My bad. Sorry about that. Go ahead.
A sexy item for him, a special gift for her, and a third item you'll both enjoy. Yes.
Both of us? My goddamn. No. It's all about the captain here. I don't worry about the other stuff there. She can worry about that on her own.
No. It's all about sharing.
Sharing? Well, I'm going to share some of that chili a little bit later on. Could also get 6 free spicy movies. Wait, spicy movies? Talk about spicy movies?
Well, I'm sure it's an Adam and Eve story, but it's going to be spicy.
Well, I like getting free stuff. The captain likes getting free stuff. We're talking about Adam and Eve. That's right. Free stuff to spice up your bedroom is even better. Select almost any one item for almost 50% off. Wait, what? Are you kidding me? They want 50%?
Don't forget to enter the offer code NECRO at your checkout and get 10 tantalizing free gifts at adamandeve.com.
Plus free shipping. That's NECRO. NECRO at adamandeve.com. Thank you very much.
This is Matt from Psychomantium. And who are you?
I'm Brian from Psychomantium.
And you're listening to the NecroCasticon.
Where's Scott?
Walter? I don't know, man.
What the fuck is Skip doing here?
Oh, for God's sakes. That's why I heard the toilet flush.
Don't go in there, Walter. Don't go in there for like 30 minutes.
Oh, God, you'd think Solon Sangaris was here.
Ugh, dude.
I may or may not have sacrificed my innards to the great dark lords.
It lies in my bowels are the pits of hell.
Skip Novak, follow me back from Scares That Care 6. Yeah, what an experience that was. We'll talk about that a little bit too here. In Volume 5, Chapter 15 of the NecroCasticon, Project Entertainment Network's podcast that blends horror and heavy metal with comic connection. But this week, motherfuckers, we have all about the metal. We are going to talk to two bands this week.
Metal.
We're going to talk to Chris Bowen from Fatal Curse, a band in Moravia, New York, has an album out. Fantastic record. You want to check out that interview. And also, we're going to be talking to a band from Albany, New York, Psychomantium, about their new release as well.
And I got to tell you, the guys we talked to from Psychomantium, they are literally altar boys. Literally.
Compared.
So innocent, so pure, so untouched.
Oh, man. I went to college with one of them. So there you go. All right.
I did wrestling shows with one of them. Probably not the same one.
Before we get into all of that and all that fun, this is a point where I'm going to remind you that you can sponsor the NecroCast account. Just go to our webpage at projectentertainmentnetwork.com, click on the advertising link, and get in touch with Armand Rosamilia about what you can do. Because, you know, you're on the internet, it's there for fucking ever. Yeah. So it's a good deal, whatever what it
That's
is.
Fair.
Be like Lucas Milliron. That's all I say. Be like Lucas.
Now Lucas ever answered my question. Lucas doesn't sell like rubber dicks and
no, he doesn't.
With silk.
No. We'll talk about he's that just, in a minute.
He's like the meme.
We'll talk about that in a minute.
We'll talk about that in a minute. So, also there's Patreon, or Skip and I have a podcast over there too called You Gotta Be Kidding Me. I found out that there is 4 or 5 new podcasts since our podcast started 2 years ago.
They
are now calling themselves something similar to ours. Yeah. But we're the original. What? We're the OGs. And they don't talk about what we talk about. That's right.
You've got to be fucking kidding me.
I'm not fucking kidding you. But this for as little as $1 a month, you as a listener and supporter of us here at Project Entertainment Network can get on our Patreon. $3 gets you the podcast when they first hit. $1 gets you the podcasts when they come a couple weeks later.
And all that money goes to support our lawyers to sue those other fucking podcasts.
It keeps us on the air, helps pay for the server costs that the network has to pay for every month. All right, so thank you very much, our patrons that are out there. Yes, all right, so Scares That Care.
Sir.
Where do you want us to start, Walter?
Back to Lucas selling rubber dicks.
Lucas don't sell rubber dicks.
No, he promised to fix my glasses, and he never did, that little cocksucker.
Lucas shared a table with Mary Sangiovanni, and Mary sold out.
Okay,
of
how did that? Okay, Mary, what happened?
Mary
what happened?
Sold let's out just of cut all to the chase. Her books.
I think she bought them herself just to get away from Lucas.
Nothing bad happened with Lucas standing and sitting and sharing a table with Mary. Lots of great things happened at this convention. Lucas sold some good books. He sold some books.
Yep.
Yep.
Absolutely. He didn't sell any rubber dicks, though.
No rubber dicks.
No. But he did show me his phone, and he has, it's like
pictures of rubber dicks.
Yeah. It's like 99% filled with memes and the different categories of memes. I've never seen anyone so organized with just bullshit pictures.
Yeah. You know what I've done? I have unsubscribed from all of his meme sources. So I don't see him when he posts.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. Otherwise, the first fucking 10 minutes of my morning is Lucas filthy meme, Lucas filthy meme, Lucas filthy meme.
Well, he sends it to me in Messenger, so.
So, Walter, you got to miss something cool as Scares That Care this year. Josh Malerman.
I've missed everything that Scares That Care.
Josh Malerman, the writer of Bird Box, was there. I got to talk with him. Yep. My favorite thing of the weekend, though, eating lunch on Thursday with Brian Keene, Kelly Owen, Mary Sangiovanni, Paul Tremblay. Yeah. And Lucas Millarion was there, too.
Well, we know where the dick jokes came from. Brian Keene.
and also, on Friday night, Brian Keene hosted trivia, horror trivia.
Well, that went on forever.
And that was 2.5 hours of fun, and I was one of the participants in that. And, that was rather a belly-aching time for 2 hours. It was pretty funny. So sometimes you got to get your family to go down there. Really, dude. It's quite the experience. Joe Bob Briggs had a presentation on Friday night.
That went like 3 hours.
That went like 3 hours, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, how rednecks saved Hollywood.
How the rednecks saved... I was at a dinner tonight for a couple that's getting married tomorrow that I'm DJing their wedding. And the guy's daughter says, "Dad, I'm rednecker than you."
Yeah, I saw you posted that, man. That was funny.
Like, wow. Are they wearing camo for the wedding? Probably not. All right. So Scares That Care 6 was great. It was fun. But right now, we're going to go back in time. A couple weeks ago, we talked to Chris Bowen from Fatal Curse.
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Scott was with us for this conversation. So let's roll that beautiful bean footage.
Never leave. You beg for me, but you won't guarantee me. Facing
Guys know how the throwback bands now are getting really popular, like the Greta Van Fleets and stuff like that. Maybe we don't call Greta Van Fleet metal, but you know what? They're fucking Led Zeppelin. You know, it is what it is. But there's other genres of music out there that are getting their homage bands nowadays that are seeing some popularity. We love Night Demon, right?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
All right. Visigoth.
Yeah, and they're a big new wave of British heavy metal band. And the album that I had you guys listen to a couple of weeks ago there from Fatal Curse, remember them?
Mm-hmm. Yep, yep.
We've got their drummer, Chris Bowen, here with us right now in the Necrocast.
Sexy we got Chris, scene. Man. We got Chris.
Hey, Chris, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing all right. How about yourselves?
We're doing great, man. Okay, you got to get the metal test from Walter right now. Walter, give Chris the metal test.
Oh, shit, you didn't tell me about any tests.
Right. I got to give a metal. Dude, he's a signed artist. And I got to give signed artists a metal test. I used to reserve the metal test for horror writers and actors. I actually got to give somebody within the circle a metal test.
Chris, yeah, okay. We won't give him the metal test. We'll have him give us the metal test.
No, the answer is...
Yeah, really?
The answer is Bonnie Raitt, Chris.
Bonnie Raitt.
So, okay. Chris, you give us the metal test.
The answer is Lee Eric.
The answer is Marshall Crenshaw.
No, the answer is Phil Lynott. Am I right, Phil? Am I right, Chris?
Okay. It always is, yes.
The answer,
yes.
My friend, is blowing in the wind.
If it's not King Diamond, it's Phil Lynott. Phil Lynott.
There we go.
Love him already. Love him already.
Oh, man. So, Chris, Fatal Curse, it's you and your brother, Mike.
Oh, wait, Tom, backtrack. Okay, here we go. The metal test that's going to segue into a conversation we're having later.
Okay.
Do you feel that Pantera ripped off Exhorter?
Yes.
There you go. There you go.
Correct.
Correct.
I don't like either one of them, but... really all that.
I love both bands, and Pantera was my band as a 90s kid growing up, but let's be honest, when you put on the Exhorter albums, you're like, this sounds awfully familiar, you know?
Right, yeah, like Slaughter in the Vatican. That's like the only Exhorter I really listened to.
That's extremely Pantera-esque right there.
Yeah.
Very
exactly,
much.
Yeah, yeah. I can see where people are saying
That's that version of Pantera, not the...
Stop with this Lord Bon Jovi Tracy. Stuff. My gosh.
Bon Jovi era.
No, why don't you share your PR story with Chris and everybody
Chris,
before?
Your album, you guys get signed. You and your brother, who's a bass player and vocalist for the band.
Yep. My brother Mike plays bass and vocals, and my good friend Dave, he plays guitar and he writes most of the music. And
Dave's got that hell of a good look, too.
What's that?
Dave's got a great look too, with that long hair and shit.
Yeah. Yeah, don't tell him that though. he doesn't need his head inflated anymore. No. Wow. I'm just kidding.
So says the drummer.
he's trying to look like Ronnie James.
Yeah.
So one thing that the guys have noted here on the show is that your brother's vocal style is very reminiscent of Biff's from Saxon.
Oh, okay, that's a very high compliment. We're all huge Saxon fans, so a huge Saxon fan. And they're, when we were writing this album, they were one of them, like one of our main influences. Even though they're musically may not sound a lot like them, but they're just one of those go-to bands for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you definitely hear all that influence of that era coming through your music.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, we're all influenced by, you know, bands from NWO, BHM, and stuff. Obviously, and they're one of the best ones. So,
what is it about Thin Lizzy that helps you as a drummer
get through life?
Yeah.
As a drummer, I don't know. I don't know if that's even. I think it just influences me as a musician and a music fan in general. Like, I can't really pinpoint any sort of like specific drumming influence, but there's just something about that. Like the dual guitar is most what I always talk about. It's just not matched. Any lineup they had, whether it be, you know, with Gary Moore in the band or, you know, anybody, you know, Robo.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, Scott Gorham was in it the whole time, but.
Oh, yeah, he's the thing that's still consistent with now with Black Star Riders, even.
You mentioned
the dual guitars, and your band's a power trio. Have you ever tried to be a four piece and have the dual guitars?
It's funny you ask because we've been jamming with a second guitar player pretty recently. I mean, nothing's really set in stone as to whether like he'll be a permanent member or not. But we played one show with a second guitar, and it was awesome.
Now, is that just to get more of that dual guitar sound that is so prominent in new wave of British heavy metal music?
Yeah, it's part of that. It's just when you find somebody that, you know, is compatible with, like, current guitar player with Dave, like, and we found, it's Greg, our guy Greg DePasquale, he did guest solos and stuff on the record.
Yeah, I think he did it on three of your songs on the record.
Yes, he did, yeah. He's just very compatible with Dave, and even, like, we started writing some stuff, and it just was really natural, and hopefully it takes off.
Yeah, that's the key right there. It's got to be organic. It's got to come together, Nash. You can't force it.
Exactly. You can't force anything in music, in my opinion.
When it comes to recording the album that you guys did, was it because I'm not pretty very familiar how bands are doing it these days? Was it track by track? Did you do live tracks? How did that process go?
It was track by track. Mm-hmm. So there was me recording the drums at first with a scratch guitar, and then we just layered everything else over the drums.
On top of that, so less pressure on you to do like live tracks. You know, you miss one crash, you got to start and do it all over again.
Well, I mean, the drumming is all live essentially, because I guess you record the drum like each song individually all the way through.
What kind of
recorded over the vocals?
So, what kind of kit are you using, Chris?
I use a 1989 Pearl Export.
Oh, Pearl.
I fucking love it.
Nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got a really good deal on it. And it's bright red, too. So, like, anytime we play shows and stuff, people just, they recognize it. It's pretty cool. I love it, though.
Do they help you bring the kit in?
Yeah.
They're just like, oh, fuck you. We got our own gear.
Right, yeah.
At least your singer has a bass. He's got an excuse. Your brother's got an excuse. You know, he's got to bring in the bass cabinet and the bass.
Yeah.
And stuff. Not like the typical lead singer asshole in a band, you know, that just comes in with his wireless mic and his girlfriend.
Yep. Exactly, yeah.
I watched Spinal Tap again the other day. It reminded me very much of the Diamond Head show down at Sharky's, where I saw you guys play once. That was a great show.
It was. Diamond Head fucking rude.
Mm-hmm. Everything that could go wrong for the opening acts went wrong for them. What failed for you guys? What was it that failed for you guys?
I
think it was the vocals for your brother.
Being specific, I don't know who it is, but the sound guy was kind of one of the worst sound guys I've ever had to deal with ever in my entire life. We were up there for at least 15 minutes waiting for him to get his shit. We would like have shit plugged in the wrong spot. And then he would go over to his board, be like, oh, God damn it, all night. And have to move shit around. And we literally sat there ready to play for like 15 minutes. But we had like fucking four songs cut that night. It was kind of annoying.
Yeah. So you guys are these young American dudes that grew up in the fucking country, boys. You're playing this music suddenly in the same venue on the same night, opening up for one of the bands that influences the music you fucking play. How great is that?
That's amazing, yeah. It was awesome. I mean, we were supposed to play with them in Rochester during the winter, and there was this huge snowstorm, so the show got canceled. We were all really fucking bummed about it. And then lo and behold, we got asked to play with them in Syracuse, like, in September. So it was, like, a miracle. It was just, like, to get us another chance to play, open up for Diamond Head, it was pretty awesome.
It was awesome. Now, we asked Dead Rider this, too, when I recently talked to him, because they're road warriors, the same as you guys are. They're traveling all across upstate New York and into Pennsylvania and Jersey and Massachusetts to play. Is the music scene dead, do you think, or is it starting to see a revitalization?
Oh, it's definitely not dead. I definitely think metal's, it's even in the past year and a half, maybe 2 years, it's been on the upswing, like noticeably on the upswing. Even just from, because when we first started playing as Rabid, there was nobody at shows ever, hardly ever at all. And I can't even say when we first started. I'm saying like maybe like 3 or 4 years into the band, still,
right?
It's almost kind of dead. And that was like 2007, 2008. So within the past decade, it's really gotten a lot more prominent. I believe so, anyway.
Walter, I'm going to throw it to you.
I'm sorry, I got caught up with something.
I would say something.
The answer is Lita Ford.
Yes, the answer is Lita Ford.
There you go. Okay.
Correct.
I had to take care of some homely matters while this interview was going on. I do apologize. It was stuff that required to be the attention. But I do have a question, though. Now, as we said earlier, that this and it's not a metal test question. You passed. This new wave of British heavy metal revival with bands like one that Tom has brought up numerous times over the past year. The last year was Witch Hazel, along with Night Demon, of course. Savage Master. It's another one that. That comes to mind as well. Do you think we're going to see more of? Do you think it's going to become more widespread, or do you think it'll be localized?
I feel like it's becoming more widespread. Like you mean like geographically or like by country?
It seems to be a big American thing right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's like a big American
resurgence.
Thing,
yeah, there's a resurgence.
Yeah. Yeah, in America, yeah. Definitely. I saw a lot. I think every one of those bands I mentioned were from. Is Witch Hazel from the States?
No,
Tom?
They're British.
They're British. British. Okay,
they're, they pretend they're 400 years old.
That seed is planted. So you got the kids that listen to the Saxon and the Tigers of Pantang and all that over there, you know. But are we going to see it more widespread, like we do see like black metal and death metal, like reach out as far as like Japan and such?
Okay, yeah, I get. Okay, yeah. I definitely do. I think it's going to be as big as like say how big like more extreme types of metal are now.
Mm-hmm.
If you would have asked me that, like I said, like a year or two ago, I'd say no fucking way. But at this point, with bands like you just like rattled off becoming more and more prominent, then I could possibly see it getting as big as those more extreme genres worldwide. I really could at this point. But, yeah, I hope so. I mean, I think. Traditional heavy metal is my favorite type of music.
Mm-hmm. You see a lot of younger, younger kids, actually appreciating this stuff. At my place of work, I actually saw a kid walking around with a Sanctuary hoodie. I'm like, whoa, wait a minute, that kid's like no more than 23 years old. I'm like, is this something new? And I haven't asked him. He's like, oh yeah, dude, World Dane, awesome, man. I'm like, oh my god, wow, that's really freaking cool.
There is hope for the future.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is hope. That's cool though. Yeah, at least every time I see kids that are even like when I was younger, I was the same way, you know? There's always the older dudes, like, you don't know who the fuck that is. Like, and then you just kind of, like, school them, and, like, and then they kind of give you the same reaction. Just like, oh, wow, well, yeah, maybe you guys all don't have rocks in your head and don't shit for birds. I'm the same way, though.
At 40, I still get it. Like, talking about bands like, you know, Blue Oyster Cult, Thin Lizzy, you know, and I got guys like in their late 50s, like, oh, that's from my time. What are you doing with that? And I'm like, wait a minute.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see that.
Offense, Tom. Hey, don't talk about our conversations, okay?
Hey. Thin Lizzy, Blue Oyster Cult, The World Goes Round. You know, I'm writing, I'm editing a fucking anthology of short stories based on Blue Oyster Cult's Imaginos album. So to say that there isn't a demand for this is an incorrect statement. There's people out there that enjoy all this still. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I got a quick question. We could say fuck, right?
Absolutely.
Oh, and right. Cunt, yeah, there's no FCC cunt regulations too. On here.
Fuck, and
fuck,
moist.
I think it's
fuck.
Okay, yeah, because I think I said it maybe over a bunch of times.
It's okay. No problems. No issues. No editing needed.
Okay. That'd be awesome if you bleeped out. I had to go back and bleep them all out.
I like wouldn't be on this show if you couldn't curse.
Exactly.
So what kind? We're a horror and heavy metal podcast here. What kind of horror do you guys dig?
I grew up on like Italian, like stuff like Bulci.
Yes!
The fucking yes. Gelato shit. God damn.
Yeah. Gotta have the gelato.
Gelato!
Yeah.
Jello mold blood, yep. Mm-hmm.
Giallo. Not gelato. Gelato's
ice cream.
Fuck it.
Yeah, Giallo. Tom hates that stuff, but I appreciate it. I love Italian horror.
How do you know you're watching an Italian horror movie? The blood is fucking Day-Glow orange. Okay. And there's a 10-minute scene of a fucking splinter going towards somebody's eye. All right.
It's like Dawn of the Dead. Dawn of the Dead. Dawn of the Dead had Pepto-Bismol blood in it.
Let's back this up a minute, okay? There was a movie made in 1963 called Black Sabbath that inspired a band to change their name. Mm-hmm. Okay? Yep. And it was an Italian movie. So let's not bust on it, Tommy.
Good God.
I believe that was directed by the same guy who directed Black Sunday as well.
Yeah.
Mario Bava, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. Bava, yes. Bava. Yes. Mario Bava, Tom, whether you like it or not, is responsible for pretty much this show.
Oh yeah, I know.
Black Sabbath is responsible for this. Sabbath is responsible for this show.
Thank Italian horror, Tommy. Thank it. Brace it,
because when it comes to, you know, the first heavy metal band to me and many people, and we could argue and say Coven or Ray Davies there, the Kinks, you know, we could argue that all day as who the first heavy metal band was. Definitively, it was Black Sabbath. Okay, by definition,
Black Sabbath is first heavy metal band.
Yeah, it's a jumping off point.
I'm Richie Blackmore, and I invented heavy metal long before Black Sabbath.
I think Geezer might have something to say about that. Yeah, Tony Iommi.
You ever notice Nikki Cross on WWE talks like Richie Blackmore? I know it's off topic, but I just
stay focused, Walter. Jesus,
Scott, you do the best, Richie.
Yeah, I know, but I'm not going to do it. You already did the Richie Blackmore thing. You run down
my gimmick. Yeah, too late. You ruined the joke.
Hey there, Richie. On a voice, you asked me to do it, and I'll do it. You're going to trample on my gimmick? Forget it.
I didn't mean to.
I'll be a snob.
Yeah.
I was snoring during the Italian horror discussion anyway, so go ahead.
Tom's going to butcher my Paul Stanley impression next, too.
No, because it's just going to sound like me doing your wife again.
Oh, Jesus.
That's the worst impression of my wife ever, so.
Wait, yeah, you did his wife?
All right. Completely off the rails. Whose interview is this?
What is going on?
Chris interviewing Chris here. Focus, guys.
Oh, we have gone off the rails to the crazy train.
Oh, my God.
So what kind of show is this?
Back up. We asked, what's his horror?
I don't have time for these shock jocks. I'm sorry. I'm stuck in a carpet.
So, let's talk about lesbians for a minute.
Let's talk about horror right there.
Stuttering John Gender. Stuttering John. Hey, what is it, Fafafui?
Fafa Fui.
Lita Ford.
Chris.
Lita Ford.
When can we see more new music from you guys?
We are currently writing the second album right now. That's why we're going to stop kind of playing live shows probably for the rest of the year, maybe one or two here and there. But we're hoping early next year. About 4 or 5 new songs down now. So
how are they? How's the crowd reaction?
Half done.
How's the crowd reaction to this?
Very well. Very well. Yeah, we played two of them, and they're very well received. I'm very. It's the best. It's cliche. Everyone's like, "Oh, your new songs."
Best, what stands out about them? What makes them different? What makes them stand out? What makes them better?
Really, more hooks and catchy choruses. Like, and that's kind of what we've always wanted to do. And, I mean, we kind of had some decent catchy choruses on the last record and shit, but this time it's a lot more oriented in that and more lyric-driven and shit. So, I think it's a cool direction. It's still the same stuff. We got a little bit more of a, it's not quite as NWOBHM. It is, but it's not. We're almost kind of moving from that tag a little bit, not on purpose, but we've been listening to a lot of Running Wild and shit, so.
Oh, wow. Pirate metal.
Yeah. It's not about pirates.
It's just a drum.
I've been listening to Running Wild for years. Mm-hmm. They've always been an influence on all of us, but. Just think of that type, you know, it's not quite as rock influenced, but more strictly heavy metal.
Less Saxon.
What is Saxon? They're more hard rock influenced, but they're obviously heavy metal. But.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Scott, you got any more questions for Chris?
Yeah, I heard way back at the beginning of the episode, I heard the magic phrase, King Diamond. So where does lie in the influence of the band?
It's just, like I said before about Thin Lizzy, I feel pretty basically the same way about Merciful Fate as I do about Thin Lizzy. Just influences me and all of us musically, and not any to any sort of specific point, but it's just our, like some of our two of our favorite bands, and they just make us want to play music. You
so
know?
Is it that 70s, early 80s European conglomerate metal sound that helped to formulate Phil Kurtz and the music you guys create? That's awesome.
Yeah.
So.
Plus, you know, the occult imagery, the fucking just masterful.
Yeah, who did your art for the album?
Yeah, I was just going to ask that too. Who did the art cover?
A guy named Manda Dika. He's from Indonesia. He got a hold of us a while ago and made our first t-shirt design. And we asked him to do the cover art.
Oh, sweet.
There you go. Cool.
Awesome. I don't know his email off the top of my head or something. I'd say it here. But if you go in the jacket on the records, then. Mm-hmm.
So what? Getting back to the European influence, was it like drummers like Kim Ruz for Misrael Fate, or Mickey D eventually for King Diamond, or you know Fast Ed? Filthy from Motorhead, bands like that that helped influence you specifically, or was there another era of drummers that really spoke to you?
Well, Phil Taylor and Mickey D is probably like my most like main influence. I just think he's like the best fucking metal drummer ever.
Mm-hmm.
And I was Phil Taylor, but actually, to me, starting playing actually was Charlie Benante from SOD.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's what really kind of formed my early drumming. As like, I think I started playing when I was like 12 or 13, and I just wanted to play the first two SOD or those two SOD albums. I wanted to play them front to back constantly. You know, and that's what I did.
Nice, very cool.
Well, Chris Bowen, thank you very much for joining us on the NecroCasticon. Where can people find you guys on the road this summer?
We don't have anything. We have any tours planned right now, but we'll be in Pittsburgh on August 10th with Lady Beast and a band Solicitor from Washington. They're fucking awesome. We played with them in Chicago at Leeches of Metal. They're one of the best bands I saw there. So that'll be fun. And then after that, we're just going to really focus on writing, I think. Hopefully get this album done by the end of the year. By the end of maybe mid-fall, hopefully.
Yeah, the current album is available pretty much everywhere. You know, Spotify, Apple Music, all that stuff. You guys on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all that stuff?
Yeah, you could do type us in on Facebook. We're on there. And our Bandcamp/Fatal Courage, you can buy the record. Hopefully we'll have t-shirts up there pretty soon.
Yeah, one more time. Buy the record, people.
Right.
Buy the music. Yeah. Support them.
Buy the record. Yeah. Purchase.
Buy the physical,
tangible item.
Buy this.
Yes.
You can also go to www. Yeah.
Support
you go
these
to,
guys,
http://... go to shadowkingdom.com. You can buy like the t-shirt. They have the album design t-shirt.
Nice.
And record tape. I think the tape's maybe very close to selling out.
Oh, nice. So it's like cassette too.
You guys released on tape?
Cassette. Nice.
Yeah. Cassette's making a comeback.
Yeah, cassette's popular.
Cassette is coming back too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You got a couple of copies down at the Soundgarden in Syracuse. I grabbed one of them. So.
Yeah, man, I appreciate that, man. I guess people are buying that there too.
Yeah, everybody's digging it. So and the reviews for the album have been stellar, and we also have reviewed the album here, and we gave it a good review too. So made a lot of Saxon jokes while we gave the review, but we still gave it a good review.
In a scene described by one investigator as reminiscent of a weird religious life.
I deny that the American people surrendered to any sense of man. Not a one of them would be for their character.
The home then burst into flames and killed for the band's lead guitarist.
Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
Not any team sniper like SNIDER. As an act, I'm here to present my views on, quote, the subject of the content of certain sound recordings.
Pulling out a gun. He was headed straight for Dimebag Darrell, the band's lead guitarist.
Hi, this is Iris, and after restructuring my contract with these guys, I'm back with something new. We can't always do the top 10 things trending in metal and horror, because the production team doesn't always record weekly. So, until we discover a way to peek up to 3 weeks into the future, we'll improvise with variations of the top 10. Like this week, for example. We're welcoming musicians Matt Smith and Brian Slattery from Albany, New York, regional metal band Psycho Mantium, to share with us their top 10 metal influences. And something tells me we'll be hearing Tom Morello and Glenn Danzig mentioned. Here's Psycho Mantium's new song, Mortal Extremis, for your headbanging pleasure. Stick around after the song, as Tom, Walt and Skip chit-chat with vocalist Matt Smith and lead guitarist Brian Slattery.
Walter, Scott's not here, and the metal is just fucking coming out of the woodwork this week, man.
Oh my gosh, yes. Yeah. You know,
You talked to Chris Bowen already. Scott was part of that interview.
Yes, he was.
We recorded it a couple of weeks ago. Chris Bowen, of course, from Fatal Curse out of Moravia, New York. And now we're going out to Bigfoot Country. Out of Whitehall, New York.
Rising from the ashes of Hungry Jack.
There is no such thing as Bigfoot.
I love watching the boys because They have the what's his face there, the Superman character, the Homelander.
Homelander.
From Whitehall, yeah. New York.
And he's a douche.
And he's a douchebag. Oh, but Matt knows if you
He's got less redeeming qualities than Negan.
Yes, Matt knows if you go to Whitehall, you're just going to find Bigfoot, and maybe you might get a glimpse of Champ, right?
There's no Bigfoot, there's no Champ. The only thing you're going to find in Whitehall, or Whitechapel, I'm sorry, is the Slasher.
Whitehall, New York. So welcome to the NecroCasticon. Brian Slattery and Matt Smith from Psychomantium, a Albany, New York-based metal act. Matt comes from a band called Hungry Jack, and you called that Tardcore?
I guess that's the easiest way to describe it. Some people described it as if the Muppets and Monty Python and Gwar had like this weird baby, and that's kind of what it was. We're like the welfare Gwar.
Wasn't Lordy like welfare Gwar?
Well, we were a couple steps below them. They had a little bit better of a budget to get costumes.
That's good to know. So, full disclosure here, guys. Matt and I go back almost 30 years.
Yes, we do.
Yeah, we were roommates in college at Adirondack Community College. And the great Ron Bechet, who taught us both how to be great journalists. God bless his soul. He's passed away now. But Matt and I used to sit down and play, what was the video game, the wrestling game we played on the Nintendo?
Oh my God.
It was the WCW game, because you and I used to fight over who got to be Dr. Death.
Yeah.
That old WCW game?
Yeah.
Where you walk around trying to kick the guy, and you kick him enough times, he gets worn down, and you get some weird fucking grapple game, so you can do like a suplex.
Yep.
Yeah, it was horrible, but back then it was the epitome of the coolest thing, because I think I could be wrong, but I think he even had like the Freebirds on it too.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah,
just Michael Hayes.
Yeah, and then Mike Timko got the Super Nintendo with the WrestleMania game for that, and we all went fucking nuts over that one too. Yeah, yeah. Here we go, talking wrestling on a metal show again. Now, are you a wrestling fan there, Brian?
I was when I was a kid, into maybe my early 20s a little bit, but I haven't been paying attention too much lately.
Yeah, neither have I. Okay. I just got grumpy with it. The old man yells at cloud. If I'm yelling at a cloud over a kid's entertainment show, there's something wrong with me. Don't watch it.
Matt and I used to work shows together out in Bolton Spa and, mm-hmm. you know, in Albany and such. Yep. Actually, I first met Matt when he was a fan back in the Tri-State Wrestling days. Back when I had a masked wrestler gimmick, and he was just about ready to work his way into the business. And he, you know, he had the Hunger Jack thing going, and he gave me his recipe for street cheese, which I still make to this day.
So, wow. Psychomantium is the name of your band. Listening to the songs that you gave us, you like Tom Morello a lot, there, don't you, bud, Brian?
Yeah, I do. I actually a bigger influence than his name escapes me, but he's from a band called Melt Banana, which is a band from Japan that's toured here extensively and did some stuff with Yamasuka Ai from the Boredoms and Mike Patton and some of those guys.
Right.
And he does some stuff that just will blow your mind compared to Morello. It's crazy.
So what I'm doing. I remember the
The literature comparison to the music these guys would do would be bizarro.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you say, Skip?
I would agree. Totally. It is out there. It's a little weird. It's a little funny. It's a little really dark. So it's good.
Yep, it absolutely is.
I pick up a lot of, because I know Matt Liss has been on a kick with like a Mastodon Clutch type vibe with this direction they're going here. Because I am picking that up there, definitely.
I'll take Clutch over Mastodon.
I'll take sure. Both.
I wouldn't. I like them both.
So what we're going to do with you guys this week is we're going to. Normally we have Iris come in and she does our top 10 things trending in metal and horror.
She's totally hot and easy.
Yeah, she is. But this week we're going to change it up a little bit. We're going to do you guys' top 10 influences for your music. Your top 10 metal influences. So let's go with. We'll start with number 10 with you, Matthew. Is it Danzig?
I would say I'm going to go on a weird out there thing. I'm going to say Zappa.
Frank Zappa. That, why is that weird, man?
Well, because it's not metal, but it is metal in a way. He was kind of metal. He was punk. He kind of did what he wanted to. So
yeah, Zappa, very influential on many metalheads.
I was going to say, I'm surprised you didn't go with the Mothers of Invention.
Yeah. I kind of incorporate the whole thing, you know, it's all. Yeah.
Well, that adds to that bizarro aspect, Skip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It certainly does. In fact, I think it's weird that it took literature so long to catch up with Zappa. Because think about it, he was the musical innovator of bizarro.
He truly was, and he was always experimenting with other things and new sounds. I mean, his tours with the Mothers is just unbelievable, and the bootlegs out there are just amazing. And I can see how it would influence, you know, a lot of the old school and a lot of the new school when they first hear it. So, Zappa has to be on the list, and, you know, I would throw Mothers in there with him.
Brian, what's your top 10? What's your number 10?
I'd say... And this is just kind of all impromptu here, but number 10 first band that comes to mind is a band called Botch. And they're a band that really were instrumental in inventing mathcore.
What's that?
Mathcore is...
Are they singing pie?
What's that?
Are they singing pie?
No, the band that would be most like four that most would come to mind when they think of that is like Meshuggah.
Okay.
Not saying they're the best at it, but they're the ones that first come to mind for a lot of like people. Yeah.
So instead of counting 4-4, they're counting 6-4.
Or is that what it is? An indication of the timing changes?
Yeah, it's timing changes. Mostly the timing changes thing. Although there's a sonic element to it too. It gets pretty complicated. But they were the
math.
They weren't
gets the most complicated.
They weren't the most technical band of the mathcore bands, but they kind of started it.
Okay. What's your number 9, Matthew?
I am going to say Fugazi.
Ooh, another eclectic band. And I remember you listening to them back in the day, too. And I was like, what the fuck is this?
EC-based punk band. Ian McKay, I believe, was the front man for that group.
They had a lot of influence on metalcore in the 90s, too.
Yes, they did. Yeah, they did.
In which they had... two vocalists, which, you know, we have in Psychomantium, which it's all like a big weird circle.
Yep. They were almost as good looking as you guys too.
Yeah. Almost.
Brian, well, I don't know about the rest of them, but I'm a sexy beast.
What's your number 9, Brian?
Oh God. I'd say Megadeth.
Nice. Now, what particular era of Megadeth? Because there's many different eras of Megadeth.
Well, I kind of feel like about Megadeth like I do about Metallica, in that, you know, I like the earlier days. Rust in Peace, you know, Marty Friedman's lead playing on that.
Phenomenal. Phenomenal.
If I can play a tenth as well as he could in those days, I'd be a happy man, you know.
I made a controversial statement on social media the other week about how Megadeth has released a better album than Metallica since Rust in Peace. Even the bad ones, even Super Collider and Risk. Yeah.
Still beats the crap out of St. Anger.
Absolutely.
The Kid's Humming.
Second band you mentioned, Metallica. What? I never heard of them.
Can I tell you this, guys?
Metallica.
The kids are at the lemonade stand, pounding their hands on the fucking table they were at today, made better music than St. Anger. Okay?
Yeah. You
know, St. Anus.
Yeah. Number 8, Matthew.
I am going to say... keeping up with the weirdness, I'm going to say Lizzie Borden.
Nice.
Great choice. Lizzie's having a little bit of a comeback lately too.
Yeah, I always loved like the theatrical, the whole aspect of it, and for the life of me, I can't figure out why they weren't a bigger band, because they had some great songs, but I really liked them, and you know, I don't know. I was actually listening to Lizzie Borden before I went into work today.
Brian?
Living Color.
Ooh,
beautiful. Great choice.
And
great choice.
Again,
fantastic fan live.
That's a reflection on your guitar style again, too, because Vernon Reid, man, he's a funk master.
He is, and you know, he got me into effects, which clearly I, you know, tend to lean towards. But he was a perfect combination of a feel player with virtuosity, just an amazing player and writer.
Yep.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right, number seven, Matthew.
I am going to say Overkill.
Beautiful.
Did we tell the story, Matt?
I was expecting you!
did we tell the story of the tour at Saratoga Winners where I got knocked out of the pit?
Do it.
Yep.
Do it.
So, my 9-year-old daughter, or however old she was, 5-year-old daughter at the time, sends me this pink fucking baseball cap for a birthday present. So me being the asshole that I am, wore that fucking hat everywhere. And I wore it to Saratoga Winners for a concert. The Overkill concert. And we kept throwing the fucking hat up on stage, and Bobby kept throwing it fucking back. And finally, sometime during the set, he's like, "What's up with this pink motherfucking hat?" Yeah.
And then they went into "We don't care what they say, what you say, fuck you," and someone knocked you out during the song, right?
And then we're moshing in the pit, and somebody just fucking cold cocked me.
"We don't care what you say,
cold.
Fuck you."
Out in your cold. Head. Yeah. The days at Saratoga Winters, man, let me tell you.
That place.
Matt, you
know, when Bobby was talking about the pink hat, was he in like, was he like normal voice or did he use Bobby voice? Like,
use Bobby
look at
voice.
This pink fucking hat on the stage. Fucking hat on the stage.
Yeah, he was in Bobby voice. Yes, he was.
He kind of does a Paul Stanley thing, sort of, but only thrashier.
Matt, did you go to the Spinal Tap album release at Saratoga Winters with us that night?
No, I don't think I did. No, I
don't. Did you go to the Ramones show?
I saw the Ramones, not at Winners, but I saw them. They did a free concert in Albany. It was, I don't even remember where it was. It was outdoors, and they played with a band called Degeneration. Not Degeneration X, but Degeneration.
It was either the Ramones show or the Spinal Tap album release, where I caught a guy fucking a girl on one of the bar stools at the bar.
Wow.
She was riding his lap.
Did you get a handy?
She's sitting there, this hot chick's riding this guy's lap, grinding on him like she's dancing and stuff. And then she steps up, grabs a wad of freaking napkins off the counter, wipes her crotch, puts it on the counter, and walks away.
That's
the guy
fucking
sits
metal.
His fucking
that
draws
is total
up.
Metal.
That was metal. That's Saratoga metal. Winners, man.
Yes.
Number seven for you, Brian.
Can you top it?
Did I just do seven? I thought I did seven.
Yeah. I don't know.
Was that just Brian? Hold on, Matt. Were you seven? Yeah.
I think so. Yeah, yeah, I did.
Brian, Overkill for number seven. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You Matt's last answer, I think, was Living Color.
Yes, that was number.
That was mine. Yeah. Okay.
Or Brian's.
Yeah, it was your number eight.
Yeah. Okay. I'd say Dillinger Escape Plan.
Wow.
I mean. Honestly, in the last 25, 30 years, I don't think there's been a more entertaining, more energetic live band in any genre, period.
Oh, they're very good live, and they're almost kind of like, in a way, like a I don't want to say a spinoff because there's really no direct connection, but I do get a lot of Faith No More type element,
dude, yeah.
Vibes. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
I'll do quick story about them. When they released their EP, Irony is a Dead Scene, which has Mike Patton on it.
Yep.
They lost their singer previously. And they had their first album with no vocals and said, "All right, just put vocals over it, and this is your audition." Mike Patton did it anonymously. And then they're like, "Who the fuck is this guy?" And it was Mike Patton. He shows up, and they're like, "Oh, shit." And they knew him from before, but mm-hmm. they decided to do an album together. So,
yep,
so yeah, right. There's definitely that influence.
So, number six, Matthew.
I am going to say Black Sabbath.
Natural choice. That's a very natural, obvious choice.
I just wrote an article about them.
You did. The Polkatuck Blues Band.
The Polkatuck Blues Band.
My favorite Sabbath album, which a lot of Sabbath people don't like, is Born Again.
You're in the home of the Born Again fan group here, buddy.
Yeah, this is the Born Again fan club. We all preach about how much we enjoy Born Again.
Zero the Hero is one of the best songs ever written.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's
trash.
Wooden Legs and Real Feet was a total riff off of Zero the Hero.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. That's why I like using the music for it for my podcast introductions, because I was like, it's fake Buck Sabbath.
And they won't sue.
What's your number six there, Brian?
Celtic Frost.
Celtic Frost? I'm sorry. I'm on a Mexican radio.
I suggest you check out their album Monotheist from 2006. It's a freaking game changer.
Is it black metal?
It is, with avant-garde, but it pounds. That album just fucking rocks. It's amazing.
Something I always loved about Celtic Frost's album covers was the Michael Whalen look of the artists. It almost looked like they were trying to replicate the old Elric of Melna Bonet covers when they did them.
Well, it is the artist, I can't remember his name, that did the design for the Alien.
Oh, H.R. Geiger.
H.R. Geiger, yeah. He's the Thomas Warrior, the singer, guitar player, is friends with him.
Oh.
And he does the album covers a lot of times.
There's a documentary about Geiger you should really check out if you haven't. I don't know if it's on Netflix or Hulu or whatever. It's on one of the streaming services. And they actually go into his house. It's, like, super creepy.
Yeah, I bet it is.
He's like the captain of the hoarders, man.
He is. He's got stuff from all over. Yeah, I saw the Dudikovsky's Dune movie, and they went to Guy Geiger's house there. And you're right. It is like a fucking museum of weird. Just stacks of weird. Break into the top five, Matthew. What's your number five?
I am going to say Metallica.
Metallica's your number five, yes. It's one of the bands we bonded over back in the day as well.
Yep,
absolutely.
They're natural. It is a natural choice, very much so.
Mm-hmm. And of course, this is during the era of the Black Album, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so... Hey,
did we saw Metallica at, was it the time... Pepsi, whatever it was called back then. Yep. Yeah,
me, you, and Lori went.
Mid-Hudson?
No, the Knickerbocker. It was called the Knickerbocker back then.
Yep. And I used to Poughkeepsie, so, okay. Yeah, Knickerbocker Arena, that's what it was called first.
Yeah.
We saw some great shows there when it was called the Knickerbocker. The Van Halen, Scorpions, Trickster show. That was a great tour. It was Van Halen, Scorpions, Trickster, and Alice in Chains. That's right. What a mismatched fucking bill.
Wow. Yeah, why is Alice in Chains in there?
They opened up the whole thing.
Holy shit. It's like when I saw Aerosmith open up for Ted Nugent.
Lane Staley talked once during the whole set. He said, I'm playing this song now because we have to. And it was Man in a Box.
Ugh.
Yeah, he stood there stoned the whole fucking show. Not moving. Now, the rest of the band was just fucking jamming out. Jerry Cantrell, you couldn't see his fucking face. He looked like Cousin It. Yeah, he really did. Yeah. Number five for you, Brian.
Deftones.
Nice.
Good. Stephen Carpenter, great guitar tone, and just really tight with those riffs, definitely.
Yep, and I give them a lot of credit for evolving over the years, too, and really trying a lot of different stuff. And I think they've influenced metal and other genres quite a bit.
Yep, they absolutely have.
They have.
And again, I can hear this directly in your music. I even heard that in Hungry Jack's music too, Matt. That Deftones influence, the way you use the vocals and the way you change them and use effects on your vocals.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Number four, Matthew.
I am going to say this will incorporate the whole Danzig thing. I'm going to say Danzig Misfits.
Okay.
Sandine. You know,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
I remember when Matt introduced me to the first Danzig album, and She.
Oh, yep.
Oh, that was such a grand night. That was after a night of playing Shadowrun. Remember that?
Yes. Yep.
Back in the day in college. Yeah. What's your number four, Brian?
I don't know. This one could probably be slotted at a few different places, but Between the Buried and Me, I don't know if you've heard them.
Nope.
Their last like 3-4 albums have just been unbelievable.
They're
songwriting
very prog metal outfit. They're quite good.
That explains why I've never heard of them.
Yeah, they prog released.
Well, that's what you have me for on the show, so I can fill you in.
Walking, talking, musical metal
Library.
Library.
I'm the historian on the show. Yes.
Yes, you're our metal historian.
Thanks.
Number three, Matthew.
I'm gonna say Slayer.
Oh, jeez.
And I've been
because he didn't say Slayer already.
I'm trying to think of this, and like Slayer, I should have mentioned them earlier, but now I'm not sure who to name for my top three.
Let's do a. I want to jump to a sidebar conversation really quick about Slayer here, because this is something that we were to discuss on the show or
Pop
like
Slayer
on separate
or
thing.
Angry Slayer.
Here's the thing: Kerry King always goes on about how Hell Awaits is a Merciful Fate album, and how you could switch Tom Araya's vocals with King Diamond's vocals, and you would not know the difference. Do you, Seriously? Gentlemen? Agree?
Wow.
I don't know. Close.
I would love to hear somebody isolate the tracks and do that. That would be like mind blowing.
Well, Hell Awaits might be on karaoke. We can get somebody to try to emulate King Diamond on that.
There you go, Tom. King Aoki. Yes. What's all they sing is karaoke songs by King Diamond.
And hosted by Scott
Mr. Scott and I. Mr. Scott and I agreed one day we're going to get a chance. We're going to sit down and dissect that dichotomy there and see what we can come up with. Kerry says that, like, you know, the similarities there in song structure, song length, the numerous riff changes, the leads and stuff. I don't know if Kerry or even Jeff though could shred like Denner and Sherman though.
So what is it about Slayer and even Danzig that stands out to you to make them, you know, part of your top five, Matt?
I kind of like the whole imagery and the lyrics, and just like when you were younger, you know, it was bad to listen to Slayer because you're going to go to hell and all, you know, all that stuff, you know, the things that you're told you're not supposed to do. And just, I've always, it's kind of like the horror, it all goes with it. And I like the Misfits from the whole, you know, punk aspect of it, and it just kind of carried along.
Okay, number three for you, Brian.
It's a tie, and I know it's a cop out, but Slayer and Metallica. And the reason is, I think both bands have had uneven histories of releases, but the fact that Slayer came out with Rain and Blood and Seasons of the Abyss and South of Heaven, like, those albums, you know, there wouldn't be me if they hadn't released those. And same with Metallica without Ride the Lightning, and particularly Master of Puppets. I just wouldn't be the same musician, or may not have picked up the guitar. So, but I can't say that they've had consistent careers.
Right. Well, you know, they have eras of careers. When you become a band like this. You know, let's take Slayer for example. I would say South of Heaven started their pop career. They started that new era of them, and that went for what, two albums? Testament, the same way. That everybody wanted to make their Black album at the same time, it seemed. Which was good for metal because it kept metal alive in an era of grunge. It really did. Yeah, you know, I remember the first day that Matt and I heard Nirvana. Smells Like Teen Spirit. We're like, wow, this is a game changer.
Yeah.
All right, number two, Matt.
I am going to say Soundgarden.
Nice.
Good choice.
Very good choice.
Again, their music style is very eclectic.
And Chris Cornell had, if not the best voice, one of the best voices ever. I mean, he was like the perfect metal singer, his range, and I don't know, just they were heavy, they could pull off acoustic stuff that, you know, that they were all over.
Not speaking for Mr. Scott, but speaking for Mr. Scott, because he's said it before on the show, he's never considered Soundgarden a metal band. To him, they're just a rock band or an alternative band.
Hard rock.
Yeah, sure. So how do you address somebody who says that when you know they're metal?
Put on either Bad Motor Finger or Louder Than Love,
or even some of the old stuff. Like my favorite Soundgarden song is an older song. It's called Far Beyond the Wheel, and his voice, he's just screaming his balls off on that. It reminds me a lot of like like a heavier Deep Purple the way Ian Gillan would just like scream. It's like, right. Where, how can a human make that kind of sound? But you know, that, and it's just the guitars were just so heavy. I don't know. It definitely,
that's off of Ultra Mega. Okay. Isn't it? Right. Yep.
Believe so.
Yeah, that's a very underproduced album. It's got that gritty production value to it, which makes it even more metal.
Here talking about Chris Cornell, and all it makes me think about is Andy Wood.
What the
fuck would have happened if he didn't die?
I know.
A lot.
Yeah.
Pearl Jam wouldn't have happened, I'll tell you that.
No. The Temple of the Dog wouldn't have happened, and that would have been a shame in a way.
That's very true. Yeah.
Both of those albums changed music.
Yep.
They really did. So who's your number two, Brian?
I'm going to have to go with Opeth.
Oh, God. Walter.
Ah, yes. There we go.
Deep cuts.
Yeah.
Now let me ask you this. Are you oh, that's current Opeth. Are you as welcoming and accepting of recent Opeth as I am? Or are you one of those guys that are stuck in Blackwater Park?
I'm actually more stuck in God, what's it called? I'm forgetting that. More like the
late Arms Your Hearse?
No, later than that. Ghost still, Reveries. Still
like, oh, Ghost Reveries, Damnation, Deliverance. Yeah, but, those records.
But I'll say this, you know, as much as Ockerfeld tries to say they're a metal band now, they're not. But
we're still heavy. We're still heavy. Just you don't know the definition of heavy. That's in every interview. He's like, what is heavy?
It's the worst we've ever done. It's like,
Now there's a guy right there as a frontman is very Monty Python-esque. Just his mannerisms on he's extremely hilarious. He is funny.
I think he would admit that as well because he does seem to have a very good sense of humor. If you've ever seen him live,
they asked him like when they did Blackwater Park, because Blackwater Park was their like big turning point record. When they asked him like what do you think was the big change in direction that you know for this record that you know differentiates from your previous works, and he goes, well, this record has finger symbols. Yeah. And some one guy kept yelling like songs from like Blackwater Park to be played, and he's like, brother, if you keep yelling that song out, we're gonna play fucking Britney Spears if you don't stop.
Typo Negative did.
Oh no, I did it.
No, that's not Typo. I know what you're talking about. That's a band that sounded like Typo.
All right, let's get back.
Number one, Matthew.
All right, well, I normally would say Clutch, but I'm not going to say Clutch. I'm going to say Motorhead.
Yes!
Oh, there you go.
Yes!
Good choice.
We know you love Clutch. That's a give, all right? So Clutch gets an asterisk.
Yeah, I would have to say, like, Lemmy is...
Well, God.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and without Motorhead, there really wouldn't have been a Metallica, and without Metallica, there wouldn't have been a Megadeth. So it's like this whole chain of events, you know, and like I think the loudest concert I was ever at was at Upstate Concert Hall, and Motorhead played with the Super Suckers and Nashville Pussy. And
Mr. Scott was at that show.
Yeah, and they brought in their own PA, and I think Lemmy had like 12 bass cabinets on stage. It's like I couldn't hear for a long time. It was so freaking out.
Mr. Scott always talks about, because he went there wearing his King Diamond Conspiracy shirt, and Mickey D, who played on that record, like got up from his drum set and pointed at Mr. Scott with wearing that shirt, saying, "Hey, nice bloody shirt there, mate."
That is awesome.
Yes.
And I have a Clutch question for you later.
Give him the Clutch question now.
All right. Do you listen to the Bakerton Group and the Company Band?
Yes.
Oh, you truly are a beautiful Clutch fan. So I have their catalog. So
do you know about King Hobo?
I haven't heard of King Hobo.
King Hobo is the guitar player. It's his solo project, and it's not all instrumental, but it's mostly instrumental.
Yeah.
But it's not like the Bakerton Group. It's more like a heavy blues. And I'm trying to remember what the other band.
So they go more towards Company Band mixed with Bakerton Group.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's kind of the guy who's a singer for the band.
Neil Fallon. That's Neil Fallon.
No. This is the King Hobo band. It's he's like from a Swedish band. I can't remember what the hell they're called, but it's really, really good. It's bluesy, but it's not like, you know, blues. It's yeah. but it's like heavy bluesy stuff, but it's not Neil singing. But definitely check them out.
All right, King Hobo is on my list.
Yeah,
I'll have to add them.
They just came out with a new album probably about a month ago.
Yeah,
Clutch puts out like an album a year now too, don't they?
Well, they have to. They have to support things. I think that's their own label. That's how they make their living.
I have to give Clutch another chance live. I only saw them live once, and this was during like the Shogun named Marcus days, and I really couldn't get into them.
Now they're all gray with their beards. So now they look cool.
Oh yeah, yeah. they're much sludgy. They're much more of a sludge metal band now than they were before. But I saw the only reason why I went was because they were playing with Corrosion of Conformity, and I wasn't too into Clutch at that time. But I've delved into their work here and there, dipped in and out. But I really got to sit down one day and just focus and check it out.
Is that a winner? Well,
no, Upstate Concert Hall, Northern Lights, back when it was called.
They came down to Norfolk and played at the Norva about seven years ago. And literally they came out as the opening band dressed in like the Bakerton Group shit. And they just literally played an entire session almost acoustically. And then they left the stage. Everyone was like, who the hell are these guys? They're great. They left the stage. They came back as Clutch.
That's awesome.
Skip, the joke was on you. Everybody but you knew they were Clutch. I gotta get my one little fuck with Skip segment out of the way. So
I wish Dan was here because I got a new metal challenge today from somebody. I'll talk about that later.
Yeah, Matt, that's another thing. Remember Dan Roberts?
Yes,
he's on our show too.
That's awesome.
He's just wrestling.
He's at World of Hurt right now. So
I hope he's kicking somebody's ass.
I hope he is too. Okay, so Brian. Who is your number one metal influence?
My influence, and I know there's like lots of bands that, you know, like Judas Priest and all these bands that I like that none of this would have happened without. But for me, the more modern number one for me is Meshuggah. Every single release is, they try something new, but incrementally, and they just get more crushing live every time I see them. And the musicianship is just ridiculous.
I agree. That's the epitome. Place. That's the epitome of mathcore too. That band.
Yeah. Yeah. So they made the whole eight-string thing. They inspired a whole generation of younger guitarists.
That they did. And I never thought because my friend gave me the very first Meshuggah demo way back in like 95, 90, you know, 96.
Oh yeah, Destroy, Erase, and Proof. I think it is.
Yep. Yeah. Yes. He gave me that because he's like, I don't know much about this band. You could have it. And I thought it was kind of cool. It was very Fear Factory-ish back then, so I liked it. You know? I never thought that they would blow up to that level, though.
Yeah, they just kept going. And, man, they're the most consistent metal band, I think, maybe of all time.
Yeah.
I may have to agree with you there. Yeah, I may have to.
Walter, shaking the earth with this.
Notice I didn't say Tool, by the way. Nobody mentioned Tool.
Thank God!
Thank God. Tool has been such a fucking great source of joy to me this week. I'll tell you why.
I was waiting for someone to mention Cake.
Because, and I'll tell you why. Fuck you, Skip. I'll eat Cake. I won't listen to it.
Yeah.
The Tool fans, the hardcore Tool fans, shitting on the new Tool album this week.
Oh, they're shitting on it like it's Undertow. You want to piss off a hardcore Tool fan? You tell them Undertow is their best album. They flip the fuck out of it.
Oh yeah, even though it was their best songwriting of all their albums, I thought.
Agreed. And Henry Rollins guested on, had a guest spot on it. Yeah,
Bottom.
Yeah, and that album, the production for that was so fucking gritty. And who was the name of the producer? Sylvia
Platt.
I'm sorry.
Yes. I said Sylvia Platt. Get in the bell jar, bitch.
Well, I don't think that's it.
No, I forgot her name, but the way she produced that
album ourselves was just with a Tool conversation.
And they had a different bass player on that album too. It was Don Moore.
I think you're right. Yes. And it was just a grittier, darker album. It didn't have to stray off into 10-12 minute, you know, epics as they put it there. And Maynard is just fucking furious about the whole record. It's great.
It had a punk element to it that they didn't have later.
Yep. It did. Yeah. Yeah. They lost the punk album, but they want to be King. They want to try to be King Crimson.
Exactly. And if you listen
Opeth,
to
like, Opeth does the King Crimson thing. Opeth does the King Crimson thing better than Tool does.
Absolutely. Yep.
Tool always reminded me of a wannabe old Genesis of Gabriel. The way Maynard goes around, if you look at old Genesis, like Selling England by the Pound. And
oh, you're right. Lane, you're right.
It's like the way he goes around and, you know, dances on stage. And
theatrics.
In his mannerisms with his vocal stuff, I'm like, that. There's a song called The Grand Parade of Lifeless Packaging. It's on the Lamb Lies on Broadway.
That's on Lamb Lies on Broadway. Yep. That's on Lamb Lies on Broadway. Yep.
That is what Tool is trying to be. I think.
You know what? Marillion.
Well,
did
the funny thing is, most of their fan base has no clue, though, that they are. No. Because when they think of Genesis, they think of Phil Collins and I Can't Dance and shit.
And I was a huge fan of Tool for many years.
No, it's the studio.
But then I got into
Opeth. It's the studio.
Yeah.
So, September, you guys got a gig. It's a pretty big gig. You're opening up for a pretty big band.
Cake. Yes. They're opening up for Cake.
No, please, no. Stop fucking with them, man. I told you, don't fuck with the guests.
It's not Smash Mouth. Smash Mouth?
No,
just kidding.
That's Smash.
The Mighty Boston's.
Matt would like to open up for the Boston's.
I would. Yeah, I worked a show with him at Saratoga Winners like years and years ago, and I was so nervous that I carried. The drummer's was called a piccolo snare in, and as I'm carrying it, because I'm clumsy as hell, he's like, "Yeah, that costs like $7,000." I'm like, "Why would you let me carry that?" You know, but they had this guy.
Do you know what sort of idiot I am?
Yeah, this guy just danced for like 2 hours. I don't know where he got the energy, but
they got the one guy in the band that just that's his whole gig. Yeah. He just dances on the side, and he's still in the band too.
Yeah, he's probably like the only original guy.
So basically,
Dickie's got to still be in the band. The vocalist,
yeah. So he's Jerome of the Mighty Mighty Boston's.
Oh God! All right, so September. What's the date of the show?
It is September 28th. It is a Saturday.
And who are you playing with again?
We are playing with a band called Born Dying and a band called Between Now and Forever. And they're like they're in our neck of the woods. They're a big, you know, bigger local band. They play the Upstate Concert Hall. They just headlined.
We don't use the word local band. We use regional.
Regional, okay. Regional.
They're this era's Clay people, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's going to be good. Hopefully, you know, their people will come out and check it out. The Strand is a beautiful place. It used to be an old movie theater, and it's kind of like a small version of like the Palace. I think the capacity is like 400, but it's, you know, it's got a huge stage, really high ceilings. The acoustics in there are beautiful, so it should be good.
And
the drummer, I grew up with the drummer from Born Dying. We've known each other since we were little kids. Bo?
That's awesome.
Why isn't he on the podcast?
I never really got around to asking him. We'd get him on there.
I
see him when I go into Stewart's or when I'm getting gas and have a 5-minute conversation with him. So
I had a question for Brian whenever you're done.
Yes.
Because he was talking about his guitar playing and his influences earlier, and I wanted to know what kind of foot pedals he uses for his sound.
I use an Axe FX 3.
Yeah.
Which came out just over a year ago. And it's so I don't use a real amp at all, period.
Okay.
It's all modeling, cabinet modeling, microphone modeling.
I love those kind of pedals.
The pedal, I don't use any pedals either. That's all modeling too. So I have an interface that connects to the Axe FX.
Oh,
and
cool.
When I change scenes, it changes all of my stuff in one shot, and it triggers samples.
Excellent.
Wow.
Yeah, it took a lot of programming, but.
I was going to say, you must have sat at the computer for quite some time.
You do more programming than Rick Allen.
Oh!
Did I go there? With one arm, no less. With one arm.
Fuck you, Tommy.
Twice I went there.
Rick, you may have more arms than Rick Allen, but you know he's got more zeros in his bank account. So
absolutely,
and he's probably got more pussy in bed.
That's true.
Here, baby, let me stump you. Oh, he does that. You know that, right? Okay. Anyway, where can people get the music?
Reverb Nation. We have a site there for now. We're going to be putting it on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, all the, you know, streaming services, so we can make our, you know, 5 cents per 10,000 plays or whatever.
You guys mind if we put it on the
money,
so people can hear it, so they can go download it from you?
Absolutely. Do what you want. That'd be great.
Excellent. We'll play it for our listeners.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you,
Brian. We love it. So double shot of music this week. Not only do we have Fatal Curse for them to hear, we have some Psychomantium for them to hear.
Yes,
rock and roll.
We're moving on up. People are letting us play their stuff on our show now. It's great.
Yes.
So we're going to the east side?
Yeah, like the Jeffersons.
The Bean Zone.
No, yes. Bean Zone burn of the kitchen.
That's right. Good reminiscing with you again tonight, Matthew.
Thank you for having us. This has been awesome.
All right, the Necrocast account is everywhere on social media. We're on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook as the Necrocast account. Go like us, please. All the way, by the way, 75 issues of the Necrocastazine I brought with me to Scares That Care.
Yeah.
So 75 people are educated on what power metal records I suggest you start off with.
Yes,
well,
yes.
Well, Walter, I will tell you this. I did send the copies 1, 2, and 3 off to a young lady in Oklahoma.
Oh, okay.
Who's been unable to attend the past two Scares That Care. And she received them today, and she was extremely grateful for not just yours and mine, but Tommy's great effort in putting these together.
Thank you.
So
excellent.
She
very good. Very nice.
Yes, the Necrocast Zine. Our zine extension of the podcast, a grassroots effort to help out writers who don't have a lot of things to sell at their tables, give them one more thing to sell at their table, and also to spread the word of the Necrocasticon.
Absolutely. And our good friend Mindy Baker. 75 people are now more aware of our good friend Mindy Baker.
Yes, yeah.
Maybe she'll sell some. She'll get some books sold.
Maybe.
And they get to read. And they get to read my. They get to read my historical perspectives on metal.
Yes, absolutely. All right, I am at @TokenBottom_Tom on Twitter, @TheTokenTom on Facebook, or Tommy Clark, as the case may be. Scott is Mr. Scott Reacts on Twitter. Check out his reaction videos. They're really cool. They're really fun. Walter, what about you?
You can find me on Twitter @YourWaltBall, and you can find me on Instagram @Smokin_Walt_Ball.
And our brother Dan, who's not with us tonight, and his Films of Fury podcast over at Anchor FM. Make sure you check those out as well, wherever you get your, as he would say, fine-ass podcasts.
Fine-ass podcasts.
Yes. And Skip?
You should trademark that.
Skip Novak on Facebook, Skip Novak on Twitter, Skip Novak on Instagram, and Amazon Authors page, Skip Novak, and AloysiusThoughts.blogspot.com for my blog, which I really seriously need to update.
All right. Next week, we're going to be talking to the director of The Mummy Returns.
No way.
Yeah. And the following week after that, we're going to be talking to the director of Derailed. Remember that movie, Walt?
Dude.
Yes, I did.
The one where the train goes underwater.
Yes. Yeah, did you see that one, Skip?
No, I need to sit down and watch it.
Yeah, sit down and watch it so we can review it for that show.
10-4, I will get on that this weekend.
Right, and we've also got a review of Velocipaster coming up soon, too.
Which I wanted to see.
Yes, well, we can all see it. We have the screener link.
Yes, I want that. I got to watch. I saw it. I was like, I got to watch this.
And maybe next week, Walter will be able to give us his unbiased review of Good Boy.
Yes, sure.
Which I sold out of at Scares That Care, guys.
Yep. Oh, I got that.
And we also have another author friend coming on the show as well, Kristen DeVille.
Yes.
Someone Scott and I have known since she first started out in the wrestling business, and she left the wrestling business for a little while, wrote a book in the process, and now she's back in the wrestling business, but she's trying to get her book out there so she can, you know, do two things at once.
And next week we'll be talking to her and getting her top 10 horror influences.
Oh.
I thought you were going to talk, say, top 10 leg holds.
Maybe that is too. Who knows? Alrighty. So until next week when we open up Chapter 16, Chapter 15 of the Necrocasticon is closed.
Vagina boob.
The Necrocasticon is an exclusive presentation of the Project Entertainment Network. Written and produced by Thomas Clark, Scott Groveston, Walter Ball, and Dan Roberts. Music provided by Daniel Edenfield.
My Favorite Story, a podcast author anthology featuring short fiction from the hosts of the Project Entertainment Network shows
Three Guys with Beards,
Jim Moore, Jonathan Mayberry,
and Chris Golden,
Tom Clark from Necrocast, Igon,
Brian Keene of The Horror Show,
Chuck Buddha, and Armand Rosamilia of The Mando Method,
Mary San Giovanni of Cosmic Shenanigans,
Jay Wilburn from Matters of Faith,
John Urban Sick of Ink Stains,
Biz Zung's Mr. Frank,
available on Kindle and in paperback and through the Project Entertainment Network store.
www.projectentertainmentnetwork.com.
Thank you for coming to the Project Entertainment Network store. Please place your order. A good choice. A t-shirt for The Horror Show with Brian Keene. A Mando Method coffee mug. There's more. A Necrocast Icon hoodie. That's sharp. But why on earth would you want Bizong leggings? Wait. Are you Mr. Frank? The Project Entertainment Network store, stacked with goodies from all your favorite podcasts. T-shirts, hoodies, mugs and more.
www.projectentertainmentnetwork.com. This has been an exclusive presentation of the Project Entertainment Network.